Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. Welcome back to the show, Rick.
It's always a pleasure, Jim. Thanks for inviting me on.
Rick, what's going on with the stock market right now? As we're speaking, the numbers are down slightly across the board, both in Canada and the U.S.
Well, if you look at some key stocks, Apple for one, you might believe we're in a bear market. And although I think it's possible that we did have a very major top in early July, I'm still going on the assumption that this is a correction, that it has further to go, and before it ends, we're going to see the lunatic stocks that the institutions all buy and hold down as much as 27-28%, and I think the S&P correction will continue so that it will eventually be about an 8.5% move off the top.
Wow, 27%. Now, when you say the lunatic stocks, are those what we've been calling the Magnificent Seven?
Yeah, I don't know what they call them. My term is lunatic stocks because they really do crazy things that are all part of a rigged game. You know, on any given day when you see Apple open on a gap down, it's because the sleazeballs who are working Apple want to shake the stock down. They may have felt that it was just too much effort to sustain the stock to keep it aloft, so they just take it down on no volume. But they do that with the confidence that they're going to be able to run it up with the same non-volume. You know, I think we've talked before about how these baloney rallies are created with zero infusion of cash and really no bullish buying. It's all just short covering, and the stocks are opened on gaps, recovering all the losses, and of course adding tens of billions of dollars to the quote-unquote wealth effect on a given morning.
With that kind of manipulation, should we be holding back here, or is this just business as usual? It's already written into the recipe, so don't worry about it.
Well, I think that my one concern would be this is the real deal. We've begun to unravel, and of course that's a deflationary unraveling. You're going to see, I don't know what's going to happen to consumer inflation, but the asset deflation is so powerful that nothing will survive it. Not Social Security, not private pensions, not the real estate market, not anything. So that's a deflationary juggernaut, and it'll bring the kind of relief to consumer inflation that we'll regret ever wanting.
Now, of course, we've talked about several U.S. pension funds being in trouble. Illinois, I guess, is the poster child.
Mine, anyway.
Yeah. Can you explain what's happened there and why they're in such trouble?
Well, I always use that they're in trouble really for the same reason that pretty much every state in the union is in trouble. They factored in 8% returns out to infinity, and for a while it looked like they might be, well, they lucked out. You know, they caught this this bull market, but 8% returns are even, you know, Soros threw in the towel, because he couldn't achieve those kind of returns with the kind of safety that he wanted. So what happens, really, we've seen how easy it is for the Fed to monetize assets, financial assets, particularly the stock market, bonds, and also real estate. But you cannot monetize an imploding pension system that has been mismanaged for many, many years. Reason being that it's not getting some stock to gap open on a given day. It's sending checks out to 1.6 million state employee retirees every single month. And of course, you can't sustain that for long, especially when 22 other states that are in nearly as bad a shape as Illinois come with their handout saying, where's ours? So in theory, yeah, you could monetize that too, but only for 1 or 2 months before people understood that that the pension system alone, if monetized in that way, would give rise to a hyperinflation. And that's not impossible, but it would backfire because the recipients getting $1,500 a month checks or $3,000 a month checks, whatever they get, and every teacher, retired teacher in the state of New Jersey and 36 other states, their $3,000 check wouldn't buy a bag of groceries if we kept up with that kind of monetization. In other words, monetizing the real consumer economy with the direct infusion of dollars.
Mm-hmm. U.S. pension's much more generous than the Canadian pension plan, by the way.
Yeah, I guess someone was watching, minding the store in Canada, but here, the teachers sort of cut loose. Nobody has time to go to PTA meetings anymore, let alone school board meetings. So what's happened is that the teacher pensions in many states, I speak of New Jersey mainly because I know two of my friends were high school administrators, and they've retired in the lap of luxury. You know, in order for you or I to retire and live off the interest of our nest egg and maybe drawing the nest egg down a bit, we'd need $5 million invested. But they need zero money invested. They get that check every month. And even Christie, who's wrong about a lot of things, when he was first elected governor, one of the things he said initially was this: the teacher pensions are going to bankrupt New Jersey, and he never did anything about it. He was just talking to make political noise, but he got it right.
Well, he was too busy closing toll bridges.
Yeah. I'm glad that finally blew over. It got to be in a very corrupt state like New Jersey. When you have corruption at that level, that points a finger directly at somebody, you know there's going to be a lot of evasions.
Well, forget about it. Now, gold, what's going on there?
It's getting dumped. You know, gold is going through one of those cyclical phases where it's being treated like garbage. And it's still in a bull market, mind you. You know, when the market bottomed last autumn, with gold around $1,700, it created quite an impulsive rally when over the next 6-7 months rallied up as high as $2,200. So that's the bullish part of it, and we've had a pretty nasty correction coming down from a high that was recorded back in May. So I think actually I'm looking at the December COMEX gold futures, and I'm looking for a possible turn around 1911. That's only about $10 below we're trading now, and I treat all of those turns that occur, what I call voodoo numbers, as possible major turns in the market. But anybody who's been bottom fishing in gold has gotten hurt pretty badly, so you need to be careful.
Bonds are rising, and that has stock markets concerned. Why would that be?
Well, the stock market is blithely unconcerned about everything, and I think when you sort of put that in the context of an absolute collapse in the bond market, meaning the inverse spike has occurred in interest rates, the amount of the increase in interest rates is already, it's a catastrophe in the pipeline. There's no way we're going to avoid it. And you're going to see it with another wave of bank failures. And you got to realize that the stock market rally over the last few months has been essentially a reaction to the stimulus to keep the bank system from imploding. But the implosion is coming, and it's loaded more, there's more firepower there than there was when a few banks failed some months ago. So So the higher rates are going to crush so many business entities, so many investment funds, so many banks, that it's really a disaster in the making. So when you look at that, and I don't think it's speculative to say it's all coming, and you see that the stock market has been able to rally in a way that persuades people, that most people, that, hey, new highs are coming, everything's fine, you realize just how nutso the stock market is. It's absolutely untethered from any reality that we can recognize. So yeah, the bond thing that's going to be a big deal. And we've just slipped beneath the threshold in TLT. That's an exchange traded fund that tracks bonds of maturity, I think of around 24 years or so, long-term bonds. And it just broke through a key support. It's currently trading around 93.27. But I think that this tripwire that it hit within the last couple of weeks is going to send it down to 88 and change. So if that happens, we're probably going to get close to realizing the 5.5% interest rate forecast that I put out quite a while ago for the 10-year bond. And whatever problems I said are already there, this catastrophe that's in the pipeline with respect to long-term rates, it's going to be much worse with interest rates above 5-year, and who knows, 8% mortgages. I wouldn't predict, but of course, mortgage rates are already high enough that they've virtually crushed the market. And it's only in places where the transaction volume is completely dried up that you still have the illusion, the fiction, the mass folly that things will be all right. But San Francisco is a good example of the Wile E. Coyote effect, where it's hovering over in dead airspace above a 5,000-foot canyon. And, you know, you're going to see the most awesome, swiftest collapse in real estate prices in history in San Francisco.
Yes, the Wile E. Coyote effect, where he runs off the cliff but doesn't fall until he's well off the cliff.
Yeah, and I know it personally because I've got a brother who just sold a home in San Francisco. Not just, I think he got out close to the top, but he'll say, oh, yeah, the neighborhoods are just fine. You know, not too many people sleeping out in our block. But the head has essentially been severed from the body there. You know, there's no economy. The economy is dying in the city of San Francisco, and it stands to reason that all the residential neighborhoods that feed off the city economy are going to die as well.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. The Fed continues to hike rates. They're not showing any sign of slowing down. But all these rate hikes have happened so rapidly. Before, in the past, when they hiked rates, they'd always sit back 6 months, maybe a year perhaps, to see if they'd had any overall effect. But they haven't given the first hikes any chance to really gain traction. Have those first hikes gained traction, and by the time we see the result of this, they may have ended up destroying the North American economy?
Well, yeah, I think they've gained traction in a way that wasn't wanted or expected, predicted, planned for, and that is that they're at the stage where they're about to trip us into a deflation, and that would be a little more success than the Fed ever bargained for, you know. I think nobody has failed to notice that Warren Buffett is sucking up bonds here. You know, I guess he's looked at all the other garbage that the private equity funds are still stuck with, and they're going to go over to falls with. But Buffett's buying bonds, and that, I think, has everybody concerned, because but he's really doing the obvious thing. You know, you have a, I hate to use the word safety when I refer to the bonds issued by a country that's bankrupt, But relative to everything else, you know, the bonds are okay because it'll be a while before the U.S. defaults on them. And there are some horrible ways that it can get around defaulting, by the way. So Buffett's buying bonds, and everybody else is saying, geez, I wonder, well, at this point, they're probably not saying or asking whether he might be right. I think they all know in their heart of hearts that he's going the right way and just following the adage that you got to buy him when nobody else wants him. So bonds have been so sick for so long that that you're almost forced to agree with him, really, that he's a true contrarian here, and he's going to make money.
Now, the second largest economy in the world, China, has decided it's not going to release economic statistics anymore. I remember when China would proudly announce we're going to have 6.7% growth over the next year. A year later, they would say, yes, 6.7, not 6.6, not 6.8, precisely 6.7% growth. Does that tell us they're in real trouble when they don't want to release information that was suspect from the start?
Well, we don't really know. I mean, I guess it sort of takes us back to the Stalin era, where the five-year plan was promulgated, and lo and behold, all the managerial supervisors met their quotas. Everything was just fine, but the U.S. Western economist made I won't call it a fine science; it was a very crude science of estimating what Russia's growth rate really was. And of course, at the time the Berlin Wall came down, we discovered we greatly overestimated their growth. So China can peg growth wherever it likes, and you know, there's nothing we can make of it really that's of much value to us. More so than anything we might speculate, such as, well, they've got a real estate bubble there, and things like that. A real estate bubble come more clearly through the anecdotal than anything government's going to give us by way of economic statistics. So we really don't know. China's just this unmanageably large country with an unmanageably large economy, and sometimes even the big sociological changes, the migration from family farms into the Nike shoe factories that sprang up, you know, these manufacturing cities, that was a phenomenon that even China couldn't measure. What was the cost of it? And, you know, to reverse that flow, what would the cost of that be? Would it be catastrophic? Are all the family farm jobs lost because agribusiness took over all the farms? So the really important, interesting things going on in China are I guess, made a statistical. They lie beyond the realm of statistics and whatever we can ferret out of them.
Now, Zhang Zhao Shadow Bank in China, their investors have actually been staging protests, something you don't see a lot in China or hear about. In fact, just before the COVID crisis happened, China was racked with both protests in Hong Kong and in China because of failed investments. What a better, perfect way to stop riots in the street than to say there's a virus out there that might kill you.
Yeah, I guess that was always the not just a theory. I mean, there were people locked away in buildings, apparently without water or food, things like that. The Chinese, they do handle problems like that a little differently from the way we do in the U.S. So, but as far as a protest, I guess any protest that occurs in China is an officially allowed protest, with the exception maybe of Falun Gong, and other people that they will put, you know, they'll lock them up and put them underground for a few years if they make too much noise.
Or harvest their organs.
Yeah, that's another staple of the Chinese economy.
China, they were going to bring in a gold-backed currency of some kind on the 22nd of this month, the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. That now appears to be on hold, but China continues to accumulate gold hand over fist. What's the reasoning behind that, and will they eventually come up with a gold-backed currency?
Well, the gold-backed currency is a load of crap, really. You know, it's sort of like saying every country wants to be like Switzerland. Well, even Switzerland long ago decided it didn't want to be like Switzerland, and it let the Swiss franc float. Otherwise, they'd reach a point where every Swiss manufactured product would be outlandishly priced. So if you have these countries that are saying we're going to implement a gold-backed currency, who the hell would use it? You know, would you rather spend gold, trade gold for energy, crude oil, or would you rather buy your oil with some garbage currency that's an infinite supply, such as the dollar? So the last thing this world wants is a hard currency. You know, the dollar works just fine, and the dollar is softest and squishiest of all in financial markets, where it's enabled the players to pile up a machine, a giant game that aggregates to $2+ quadrillion. So who the heck needs another currency? You know, a currency, the Chinese might eventually do that in the aftermath of a deflationary global bust, just to sort of establish their hegemony in the financial world, you know, to be the initial building block on which a new global financial system would be built. But right now, for Brazil and Russia and India, you know, the BRICS, to say, we hate the dollar, we're going to come up with something new, they don't want that. They don't want the burden of something new. And even at that, there's no way you can dismantle the existing. How do you segue the $2 quadrillion in the derivatives market into some other currency? So you can't do it. You're going to collapse the whole house of cards. And so all this talk about, you know, a hard currency or even a digital currency is just a lot of crap.
Now, on digital currencies, should people be fighting against that?
We've got one, you know, it's called credit cards, the credit card system. And, of course, the success of the credit card system is what has suppressed the competition from cryptocurrencies. Cryptocurrencies never got their act together for being useful in transactions. You know, they became useful for just one thing, and that was speculation. And that's still the case. Mm. You know, I can see a lot of people sort of revving up for round 3 or 4 or whatever it is in the crypto hoax. But, you know, people, I'm not sure that they, you know, when you talk about fearing a digital currency, the government, everything you do, everything in every bank account you have, every credit card, it's known to whoever wants to know it other than you. But, you know, TRW and Experian and TransUnion, they all keep track, and it's not like they closely guard your financial data. It's not a well-kept secret. So for as far as a digital currency allowing the quote-unquote government to quote-unquote track us, we're already tracked 6 ways a Sunday.
When we were chatting before we turned on the microphone, you said crude is the only thing that shows promise right now, or isn't on the verge of collapse.
Well, that's a horrible irony of whatever this chaotic state of the economy is. You know, we're facing a commodity collapse, a banking collapse, real estate collapse, but crude futures, NYMEX crude, is pretty robust. And recently, you know, I could make a technical case for crude, NYMEX, Texas crude, going up to 105, currently 80. So that would be a big increase. And if it does get to 105, we'll see prices of $7, $8, $9 at the pump. And I'd like to see whether the stock market can shrug that off. If there's a glimmer of hope here, it is that crude's last pop, this would be basis the September NYMEX contract, occurred at 84.67 $84.67 a barrel, or within a penny or two of that. And that just happens to be what I call a midpoint hidden pivot resistance on my charts. So it's possible that we did see, we have seen within the last couple of weeks, a major top in crude, which would come as a welcome relief, because you can see pump prices now have pushed well above $4 pretty much everywhere, and you know, California was obviously first to get there, so it's possible from a technical standpoint we've seen a final top in crude. But if it pushes through that red line, 84.66 basis September, you better batten down the hatches, because 105 will be possible at that point.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Always a pleasure, Jim, and I appreciate the chance to connect with your audience.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.